It's Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, and I'm Dave Sobel. Welcome to the Business of Tech Lounge. Today on the show, Microsoft makes changes to 365 offerings around Teams, Nerdio releases new management tools, CompTIA embraces AI, plus insights from Peter Kujawa of Service Leadership, and NIST2 Insight with Eric John Fraser. Glad to have you today. I want to thank SalesBuilder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Want to get your logo here? Vendors, you can do so with our Vendor Patreon program. It's a simple monthly subscription and visit patreon.com/MSBRadio to sign up. I can't do this show without support. And thanks again to SalesBuilder for theirs. Now, I do take questions and comments throughout the show, so make sure to put them in chat. We'll have a dedicated question section in the show with listener-submitted questions. I'm really glad you can join in today. This show is to hit up some of the news stories I'm tracking while taking this week off from the Daily News Show. And so now, our top story. ConnectWise has released its annual MSP Threat Report, which analyzes key cybersecurity incidents and trends from the past year. It highlighted the most exploited vulnerabilities, including those in popular software such as FortiOS, Citrix ShareFile, and MoveIt Transfer. The report found that threat actors are increasing their focus on defense evasion stealth tactics to avoid detection, and specifically trying to bypass EDR, indicating a need for layered cybersecurity solutions inclusive of prevention, like EDR, detection, like SIEM, and 24/7 monitoring, like managed security operations centers, in order to best protect SMB customers. With a comprehensive analysis of ransomware trends, it revealed a 94% increase in ransomware sightings in 2023 compared to the previous year. It examined the top five most cited ransomware groups, their techniques, and the overall shift towards attacks of opportunity targeting SMBs. According to analysis by Google's Threat Analysis Group and Google Cloud's Mandiant, threat actors backed by governments are more likely to exploit newly discovered zero-day vulnerabilities than financially motivated cybercriminals. In 2023, 97 zero-days were observed in the wild, with 48 attributed to government-backed advanced persistent threat actors and 10 attributed to financially motivated cybercriminals. Chinese operators led the way in exploiting zero-days, followed by Russia, North Korea, and Iran. Looking ahead, the pace of zero-day discovery and exploitation is expected to remain elevated, with threat actors targeting a wider range of products and services. And before I get to my own reason why we care, there's an obvious one from Axios. Small business owners are increasingly concerned about cyber attacks and are investing in cybersecurity tools and consultants. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce's first quarter small business index reveals that 60% of small business owners are worried about cybersecurity threats. For perspective, 48% of small business owners trained their staff on cybersecurity awareness and protections in the last year. While two-thirds of small business owners say they're concerned about cyber threats, 58% also said they're concerned about supply chain disruptions. And 73% of owners said they're at least somewhat prepared to respond to a cybersecurity incident, while 67% said the same about a supply chain disruption. So why do we care? SMB owners want to be prepared. That's the real insight. And do not overblow or overdramatize the risk to them. They're just as worried about having their supplies cut off as they are about cybersecurity, and they're more prepared for cyber. It's important to put the threats in context. Often, we talk about the IT spend as if it's the only business priority. It isn't. I also want to highlight that the concern is addressed by being prepared. Too often, the IT provider community thinks that means throwing tools at the problem. Instead, focus on cyber hygiene and disaster recovery preparedness. Bonus points if you can help with supply chain issues. Got a question or a comment? Put it in the chat if you're watching live with us. Now, I've got a few more stories to cover today. Microsoft is separating Microsoft Teams from its Office suite of products on a global level, selling Teams separately. This move comes in response to an antitrust complaint filed by Slack and an investigation by European regulators into Microsoft's bundling of Teams with Office 365 and Microsoft 365. Starting from April 1st, customers will have the option to keep their current bundle or switch to the new offerings, with a standalone monthly subscription to Teams costing $5.25 and Office without Teams costing between $7.75 and $54.75. And while I'm on Microsoft, Microsoft has introduced new capabilities for Copilot for Microsoft 365, its AI assistant for commercial customers. The paid version now offers priority access to OpenAI's GPT-4 Turbo model, providing faster and more accurate responses. The limits on the number and length of responses have been removed, and enterprise-grade data protection is ensured. Starting in May, users will also have priority access to Microsoft Designer and expanded image generation capabilities. Copilot for Microsoft 365 is priced at $30 per user per month and is available on the web, mobile devices, and integrated into various Microsoft 365 apps. Microsoft has developed new safety features for Azure AI customers to detect potential vulnerabilities, monitor for hallucinations, and block malicious prompts in real time. These features aim to prevent generative AI controversies caused by undesirable or unintended responses. The three features currently available in preview are prompt shields, groundedness detection, and safety evaluations, with two additional features coming soon. The monitoring system evaluates prompts and third-party data for banned words or hidden prompts and checks model responses for hallucinated information. Azure users can customize filtering options and receive reports on users attempting to trigger unsafe outputs. But the U.S. House has banned staffers from using Microsoft Copilot on all House Windows devices due to concerns of potential data leaks to non-approved cloud services. This follows similar restrictions on the use of ChatGPT in congressional offices last year. Microsoft plans to address federal government security and compliance requirements with AI tools like Copilot later this year. And from QZ, Microsoft customers are comparing Microsoft's AI Copilot to OpenAI's ChatGPT and expressing dissatisfaction with Copilot's performance. However, Microsoft employees argue that customers may not understand how to use the tool properly. Mixed feedback has been received from Microsoft 365 Copilot, with some customers struggling to implement the tool and making unfavorable comparisons with ChatGPT. Microsoft has hired Brainstorm to create training videos to help customers use Copilot more effectively. So why do we care? As one who's focused on helping customers be more productive, let's note the collision of antitrust regulation with software here. When I talk about EU laws impacting the US, this is what I mean. Now note that customers have more options to assemble their productivity stack. Don't want to use Teams? Slide Slack or Zoom into that spot with a non-bundled option. Teams has to win its spot, not just be the default. And that goes for Copilot too. It needs to win on functionality, and apparently on privacy and security too. The U.S. House ban speaks right to that. That said, this is actually good news for service providers. Note how many versions of Copilot there are. Focus on specific requirements and industries. A partner opportunity to help customers navigate that and find the usefulness. This is good news for IT service providers. Remember, we're taking questions, and I'm watching that chat. Throw something in chat if you're... question if you've got it, and we'll be taking questions later in the show. Now, dropping tomorrow is my interview with Peter Kujawa, and I want to give you another highlight from that great conversation.
Best-in-class MSPs and VARs are the least likely to offer unlimited PTO. And I'm intrigued by this because at some level, unlimited PTO is actually a bit of a head fake. When we actually dig into it, we find employees that are offered unlimited PTO actually end up taking less PTO, and it removes some level of cost from the organization. Tell me what you're seeing with this kind of this data point around unlimited PTO and its relationship to profitability and best in class.
Yeah, it's exactly as you described. The first of all, the number of companies, the number of positions that were offering it was a little less than we were expecting based on discussion we were hearing. Second is it's much more for manager positions, and it's heavily distorted amongst MSPs by owner positions. So if I'm an owner, technically, of course, I have unlimited PTO. It's one of the reasons I own the business. I can take off whenever I want. I can travel whenever I want. Of course, as every owner watching this knows, I also rarely do. And I'm rarely able to as an owner. So technically, the set of managers receiving unlimited PTO is much, much higher than staff positions receiving it, which was not surprising. But it's the amount of dominance of owners was really skewed that data somewhat. So yes, as you described, unlimited PTO is primarily an advantage to the employer because I don't have to accrue to payout upon separation unused PTO. The dominant models are still, we collected also 11 to 20 days of PTO or 21 days plus of PTO. And so there's a lot of data in the report about that. It's different, obviously, for managers and staff. It's different based on longevity. But definitely the two big models continue to be giving PTO and the 11 to 20 day is the dominant model. We do see a lot of 21 day, but not unlimited as well.
Interesting.
So basically, if you want your employees, if philosophically as an employer, you're trying to minimize your liability, then go to unlimited PTO. If philosophically you believe in the importance of taking PTO and you believe that your employees should use that amount of time off per year for various other reasons, then we'd recommend still giving them that PTO.
So we have to ask, why do we care? Now, I'm looking forward to you all getting access to this. It releases broadly tomorrow because benefits matter. One of the interesting points of looking into this data is the ability for you as an owner or operator of a managed services provider or IT services company to make decisions about where you spend your time and how you compensate your people. Unlimited PTO is a bit of a head fake, and it proves out in terms of the numbers as well. And in fact, giving people their time off will actually encourage them more to take time off. If you want to prioritize building a good culture, building work-life balance, as well as using that balance to drive productivity, you're going to need to be intentional about managing it. That whole interview is really useful for digging into the compensation packages, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it more next week. Now, remember, we've been taking questions, and you can still submit anytime in the chat window or submit for next week if you're watching the recording. Sending to question@MSPradio.com. Now let's do a few other stories, this time not Microsoft related. Nerdio has announced significant updates and new features to Nerdio Manager for Enterprise version 6.0 and Nerdio Manager for MSP version 5.0. The product includes a unified application management capability, which allows MSPs to centralize app storage for all their customers using native Microsoft WinGet technology and develop apps to some or all customers targeted by user, group, device, or device type. The product also adds Defender for Business, backup and disaster recovery of policies, boot diagnostics insights, and pre-canned global views. The product also introduces Assist Pro, an AI-powered in-app assistant driving instant, context-aware support and unified app management, a tool ensuring consistency and simplicity of application management across customer environments. Movia has introduced a native Halo PSA integration for Perfect Project, providing accurate project management capabilities for MSPs. This integration comes at a time when project management is becoming increasingly crucial for MSPs, as highlighted in the 2024 MSP Trends Report. Movia's commitment to enhancing project and resource management features tailored for MSPs allows for seamless integration and improved project analytics. CompTIA has announced the expansion of its learning and certification programs in AI, addressing the need for AI skills in various job clusters and roles. The Essential Series focuses on foundational competence, while the Expansion Series builds deeper advanced skills. The releases will cover areas such as software development, cybersecurity, data analytics, prompt engineering, and AI systems architecture. The goal is to provide competency-based learning and certifications for the age of AI. So why do we care? I included the Nerdio announcement as both an update and also a comparison against last week with Enable's announcement. Cloud management offerings are in various levels of maturity, and I want to make sure we're keeping an eye on that, particularly as we move toward a much more cloud and SaaS-based offering solutions for the way we deliver solutions. You're going to need to understand the way you manage it and what your techniques are. So let's keep an eye on those spaces. Now, Halo seems to be the flavor of the week, with several integration announcements lately. Now, I want to know from you listeners, what is your thought on the PSA landscape and the importance of those various spaces? Is this something we want to dive into more, or is this something that we don't care so much about? Now, CompTIA is a big player in training, so it should not surprise that they have an offering. My thought? You're going to want to be thinking about your own training strategies and how you're going to be upskilling your own internal staff. What is the systematic way you want to approach AI and making sure your teams are ready both to use it in the organization as well as help customers with their needs? This is going to be related to your thinking on the way you implement frameworks within the organizations, and I want to make sure to highlight that this is an area to address. Now make sure to put any questions in the chat. We'll be getting to them right now. Remember, bring your questions live and you'll get a live response. I really do enjoy taking questions, and if can, submit them ahead of time. Q&A gives us a chance for you to get involved with the show and be a participant in what we do here. Let's take our first submitted question.
What are the best practices for structuring pricing in a way that appeals to small businesses while ensuring sustainable revenue for the MSP?
I love the pricing question because ultimately there are so many ways to do it and there isn't one answer. Ultimately, I tend to favor a model that says initially you're going to focus on consulting and project style revenue that you then find ways to turn into monthly recurring revenue as appropriate. You likely have a series of engagements that happen on that monthly recurring revenue basis around managing, monitoring, and controlling configuration, security, and the way that you think about it. But on top of that, you're building your productivity and consulting offerings. I think a healthy combination of both is the best way to do it. And we'll note that generally best-in-class data says that tends to favor that implementation model. So don't overthink it, particularly something that is newer. You're going to want to capture via consulting hours and engagement on a regular hourly basis. But as you establish the way that you've thought this through, you'll move portions of that into monthly recurring services. So for example, if I'm thinking AI, you're going to do something around helping them with framework development, helping them with ethical considerations, and helping with training. And you'll roll in maintenance of that framework and ongoing updates to training as part of your recurring revenue component. It's something that you can iterate with over time and continue to do so ongoing. Tweak it, and finally, think through the areas where you want to retire services, because over time, things are less relevant, and make sure to take them out of your offering when they don't make sense anymore. I really do appreciate these questions. If you've got them, make sure to send them in. This is the best part of the show to get interactive, and we do it every single week. I keep an eye out for the listeners' questions submitted and make sure those are put first, and we will always take them live when you show up and ask away. Now, I want to give you a preview of an upcoming interview that's coming out. NIS2 is a new EU directive that aims to enhance the security of network and information systems across the European Union. It's an expansion and strengthening of the previous NIS directive that was introduced in 2016. It expands the scope of the original NIS directive, covering a total of 15 sectors compared to the previous 7 sectors. This includes more critical infrastructure and essential services. It applies to both essential and important entities, with essential entities facing stricter compliance monitoring and higher potential fines for non-compliance. It imposes new requirements for risk management, incident reporting, and supply chain security for in-scope organizations. I spoke with Eric Jan Frazier about why American companies should care. Here's a preview of that interview.
And with NIST, that Network Information Systems Law, and the directive from the EU, what's happening with it over the course of this year?
So what we see is that that the NIST 2 directive is coming towards us. And there's a lot of buzz going on around it in Europe. We see a lot of countries developing their own requirements. The member states are developing their requirements. And a lot of companies got lost in the jungle that called NIST2 at the moment. And we developed a platform for that to help these companies out becoming compliant to NIST2.
Well, let's take the quick step back. What is NIST2? What's it contain and who's it applied to?
So the NIST2 is a follow-up on the NIST1 directive, and it really focuses on cybersecurity. It focuses on these high critical and other critical sectors that really need to have their cybersecurity on a good base level. And what has been developed is a directive that really shows these companies that they need to have in order to be compliant to NIST2. And one of the other things is that there will be fines granted to these companies if they don't have this in place. And that's really a difference if we look to other directives.
Now, a lot of these cybersecurity frameworks are very standard, right? We talk a lot about the NIST cybersecurity framework in the U.S. We've got some of the new directors around that. But one of the things about NIST2 is it applies very broadly in a way that a lot of my American listeners ought to care about. Talk to me a little bit about how it applies and who it applies to.
So it really applies, if you look at the official way, to two sectors, the high critical sectors. You can think of the energy companies, transportation, financial market, healthcare, drinking water, wastewater, digital infrastructure. These are really the high critical sectors, but also the administrators of IT services, space travel, banking. So the section that's called the high critical sectors. But we also have the other critical sectors, and they are these are the digital providers, postals, courier services, waste management, food producing, chemicals, research, manufacturing. It's really a broad spectrum of these companies. And what we also see developing is the supply chain companies that are offering services to these companies. So it's getting broader and broader in companies that need to comply and companies that want to comply to NIST2.
The deadline to transpose the directive into national law is October 17, 2024, at which point organizations will need to be compliant. Now, as a reminder for listeners, my Patreon supporters already have this video, and you can get all my interview content early as a supporter. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio to learn more. I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workforce with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Vendors, you too can get your name mentioned on the live show. It's a simple monthly subscription. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio to learn more and sign up. And listeners, you can support the show in lots of ways. Like, share, and follow on your favorite platforms, or support directly on Patreon with our Give What You Want model. You set what you think the content is worth, and we appreciate every bit of support. And if you have a question or are listening to the recording, send it in at question@MSPradio.com. Tomorrow, for all listeners, you'll get that interview with Peter Kujawa and What's Bacon Got to Do with Business? Saturday, you'll get my appearance on Slow Smoked Business as Jared Morgan turns the tables and asks me questions. On Monday, you'll get that interview with Yerrick Jan Frazier, and I'll be back on Wednesday with a regular news show. Next week, this live show is on Thursday, so catch us live Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining me for the Business of Tech Lounge, and I will see you next time.